Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the president's red line with Syria, which may have been crossed with a limited use of the chemical weapon sarin. A former UN Special Commission Chemical and Biologicals Weapons Inspector in Iraq, Raymond Zelinskis, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute for International Studies, joins us. We will discuss UN efforts to get a team of inspectors into Syria that the Assads are blocking and what might be done to secure Syria's substantial WMD arsenal from use by either the regime or the rebels. Then we'll look into the historical legacy of George W. Bush that his former spokesperson and Fox News pundits are now revising to suggest that Bush kept us safe from terrorists while Obama did not. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, Secretary of State Colin Powell's Chief of Staff, who served in the Bush White House, joins us to discuss the glaring omission of 9/11 from this latest revisionist history and how much Bush and Cheney are helped by the 9/11 truthers propagating conspiracy theories shared by the Boston bombers that served to cover up Bush and Cheney's reckless endangerment of the United States for failing to prevent 9/11. Then finally, we'll be joined by Joan Walsh, editor-at-large of Salon.com and an MSNBC analyst. She is the author of a new book just out in paperback, What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. We will discuss the domination of our politics by a minority of angry white men who have prevented sensible gun safety measures that 90% of Americans favor, and what can be done to restore majority rule in the United States government. Joining us now is Raymond Zelinskis, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies with the Monterey Institute for International Studies. He is a senior investigator at the Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Center component at the Center for Nonproliferation Studies, which is working in partnership with the Center for Infectious Diseases and Emergency Readiness at the School of Public Health at the University of California at Berkeley. He is a former United Nations Special Commission Chemical and Biological Inspector in Iraq and is the author of Biological Warfare, Modern Offense and Defense. And his new book, co-written with Milton Leitenberg, is The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. Welcome to Background Briefing, Raymond Zelinskis.
Pleasure to be with you again. Yeah.
And there's clearly a lot of focus now on Syria and reports that there have been a limited use of chemical weapons, I think. Sarin is what is being cited here. Obviously, the president had earlier talked about the use of chemical weapons by the Assad regime would be crossing a red line. And some analysts suggest the president may have essentially put himself in a situation where he's really got to act on his, you know, in other words, he's got to call his own bluff. So that has caused the president to sort of back down a little bit and wait for some more information. And the more information would presumably come from the UN team, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. They're a group of inspectors working for the United Nations. At this point, they're waiting to go in and check to see whether there's any real evidence here. But Syria seems to be blocking the mission. The mission, of course, is led by a Swedish scientist, Åke Sällström. So what's your understanding of this standoff?
Well, first of all, the team that's waiting to get in, and it is being sent by the UN Secretary General. They want freedom of action to conduct their investigation, but the Syrians, with the support of Russia, would only allow them to go to Aleppo investigate that one event, which happened maybe now about 3 weeks ago. The latest supposed use of chemical weapons by the Syrian government that the United States has said might have happened is probably not going to be investigated by this team. So it's completely two different events. One that is investigatable, shall we say, by the UN team, and one that we still are up in the air about, and whether or not it can be investigated.
So when the Syrians say that they don't trust the team because it has some Americans and Britons on it, even though my understanding is it's largely scientists from other countries, 15 of them, and including analytical chemists from the World Health Organization, led, of course, by the Swedish scientists that I mentioned, that's the standoff. I mean, you served as a UN weapons inspector in Iraq. Aren't these teams pretty independent? They're operating under the UN. They're not operating because of the nationalities of the members.
That's true. The Iraqis had somewhat of the same situation with the UNSCOM teams, which I was a member of twice. And that was that they did not like the Americans to be on these teams. And that was eventually settled by the UNSCOM being dissolved and a new organization being set up that was a UN organization called UNMOVIC. And that one hired people from all over the world. And their primary loyalty was to the United Nations, not to the countries where they come from. Now, I must say that this team that's being assembled is an ad hoc team, as far as I know anyway, and they're not hired by the United Nations. Now, some of them come from the OPCW, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, which is headquartered in The Hague, Netherlands, and that is an international organization with inspectors that whose first loyalty is to the OPCW. So I think that the team right now, as far as I know it, would be the proper one to actually mount the investigation.
Well, they're apparently standing by in Cyprus, ready to go in. Now, Ray Zelinskas, again, he directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute for International Studies, and he's a former United Nations Special Commission Chemical and Biological Inspector in Iraq and the author of a new book co-written with Milton Leitenberg, The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. So when the president recently, speaking with King Abdullah of Jordan, said we have varying degrees of confidence about the actual use. There's a range of questions about how and when these weapons have been used. And the president then went on to insist on a vigorous investigation, and the proof of the use of chemical weapons would be a game changer. So clearly the president's hedging in the sense that he's not suggesting that the red line that he talked about earlier is being crossed. But, I mean, the U.S.'s options don't look particularly good, do they? I mean, I understand there's a special forces team in Jordan near the border there training Jordanians for the possible interdiction of going in there and trying to secure these chemical weapons. But wouldn't that be a really difficult job? I mean, I guess that in many ways was what was going on in Iraq.
Well, there's a little difference again. The Jordanian team, as far as I know, and all of this is classified, by the way, you know, the real details, but the Jordanian team wouldn't go in to do an inspection, an investigation. They would go in to secure a site,
which is quite different. Right. Now, that's what they're doing, and that's the question I have, because a lot of the so-called intelligence on this is coming from the Israelis, which are based on photographs. So there are two issues here. One, to verify whether the red line is being crossed, and then two, what would be done in the event that the red line was crossed. So let's not confuse it. Start with the first one. The evidence so far, to your mind, Ray Zelinskas, is not sufficient to believe that the red line is being crossed. Is that right?
That's right. I agree with you that the main evidence seems to come from photographs and by the Israelis. And what they're saying is that the symptoms of mostly dead animals are suggestive or they say indicative of a nerve agent attack. The main signs being a drooling, an obvious drooling of around the mouth and nasal passages. And the second one of being something called meiosis, in other words, pinprick pupils. Now, it is true that these are indeed signs of nerve agent poisoning, but they're also a sign of organophosphorus pesticide poisonings. So I want to make sure that unless you have samples, you really can't tell the difference. You cannot tell the difference from photos. And I don't know how the Israelis can have such fine photos that tells them that indeed there are, that the pupils are pinprick rather than normal size. But that's, again, these are classified information, I guess.
But sarin itself was developed by German scientists and Hitler stockpiled it during World War II. Apparently, it's extremely dangerous to manufacture and requires sophisticated equipment, and it contains four major ingredients, include phosphorus trichloride. Where did the Syrians get their information and know-how and precursors to make their chemical weapons program, which I believe ranges in the tons of or hundreds of tons of materials?
Yes. Well, undoubtedly, they have a pesticide industry. They have a chemical industry that can deal with some of these very toxic agents. Also, the question is whether or not the Iranians have provided them with information. The Iranians set up a chemical weapons program during the Iran-Iraq War that lasted between 1980 and 1988. And then there's also the question whether or not some of the Iraqi scientists or technicians escaped to Syria with some knowledge. And also there's this very odd event that's not fully known about the Russian general. His name is Kuznetsov, who was head of the agency in Europe in Russia that dealt with chemical and biological weapons issues. So he was fired from his job by Yeltsin because he apparently sold secrets or even the agents itself to Syria. And that whole episode is still very murky. So we have, you know, all kinds of mysteries going on exactly how were the elements of a Syrian weapons, chemical weapons program assembled and operated.
But given the fact that they may well have, a Russian general may well have passed on Soviet classified material on their chemical program, what about the Soviet biological program, which you've written about with Milton Leitenberg in your new book, a very hefty book, I might add, The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History? I did some research on that some time ago with Ken Ellerbeck, who was the deputy director of Biopreparat, which was the cover for this vast program. And the real guy in charge, of course, is General Kalinin. And he's still around, is he not?
Yes.
And he's still an influential guy.
Yes, he's a consultant to the Biopreparat system as it exists today in Moscow. And by the way, please let me correct the name of the Russian general that I just mentioned. His name is Kuznetsov. So it's anyway, but yes, but you can't link that to Syria or any other program. The Soviets were extremely secretive about its biological weapons program, to the point where even their allies, the East Germans and the Czechs and the Poles, none of them knew anything about their offensive program. They knew something about their defensive program because they had training exercises and such, but nothing about their very, very large and very, very sophisticated offensive biological weapons program.
And more to the point, the U.S. didn't know about it, and the Russians had signed the treaty going back to the Nixon era, and there was even a use of anthrax deaths in Sverdlovsk, which at the time was the Communist Party leader there was Boris Yeltsin, and they had a factory right in the middle of the town that was making biological weapons, anthrax, and a lot of people died, but essentially the West believed the cover story, didn't they?
That's right. They did for a long time. The cover story being that it was a natural outbreak, essentially caused by a farmer bringing in an infected animal to Sverdlovsk, butchering it, and then selling the contaminated meat. But it was very clear that it was not a gastrointestinal form of anthrax that affected the population of Sverdlovsk. It was inhalation anthrax, and that, as you mentioned, came from a factory that was set up some years before that by the military to produce not only Bacillus anthracis spores, but also other biological weapons agents. And as the city grew, it came to surround that factory, but they just kept working along. And then they had this accident in 1979 with up to about 200 people, with about 60 to 80 people that died. And after that, they closed it down very rapidly and moved it to another area and eventually set up another production plant in Kazakhstan in a place called Stepnogorsk.
So, but just to finish up on this, there is no evidence that there's evidence that the Soviet chemical weapons program was transferred, elements of it were transferred to Syria, but not the bio. They've been very, very scrupulous about that, have they not?
That's right. Nothing. But their biology program, there was this issue whether or not the Soviets had supplied Iraq with smallpox virus, but that was not the case. That was did not happen at all.
So, and the only two countries that have the variola smallpox are the U.S. and Russia, right?
That's right, officially, anyway.
Officially, and that is a hideous thought that that could ever get loose. Let's go back then to where do you think, Raymond Zelinskis, this situation with Syria will go, given the importance of it, because it is essentially, it could be the trigger for U.S. and NATO intervention in this war in Syria. What do you think is likely to happen?
Well, I don't really have a good crystal ball on this. I can only, my gut feeling is that eventually the pressure would be on the Syrian government to allow the UN inspectors to go in into the preliminary investigation. But that it's not. That's only going to, like I said, deal with one event. This whole new event of. Of a small, what they call small-scale use of nerve agent by the Syrians is yet to be settled.
Now, do you think some analysts say that the Syrians deliberately did this small-scale use to test the red line? Does that make sense to you?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't make sense to me either. But the bottom line here is that they have tons of this stuff, and the real scare would be. If the rebels got it, you've got these al-Nusra people that are allied to the so-called al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they're not even a trained military for all the deficiencies and brutality of the Syrian military. These guys are really like something out of Mad Max.
That's right. Well, something I worry about, I just keep in the back of my mind, is that one of these fanatic groups that are... or allied somehow with the Al-Qaeda, will end up using either an organophosphorus pesticide or maybe you'll be able to secure the chemical agent somehow in Iraq and then use it in such a way that the international community thinks that the Assad government used it. And that then would trigger off this red line threat of the Westerners going into Syria, and then we're into another kind of Libya, Egypt, Iraq situation, which I certainly hope does not happen. I mean, what we really need is an international effort to investigate these events, and if indeed chemical weapons have been used, then a UN force should really should be sent in, not an American force.
Well, you know, there's pressure, of course, from John McCain, who's just been to the Syrian border in a refugee camp in neighboring Jordan, talking about how the refugees are bitter and want to take revenge, and they're bitter at the Americans for not helping them. And, of course, he's beating the drum for an intervention and has been for some time. And we can be very suspicious of the Israelis' motives as well. But I think, just in closing, Ray Zelinskis, it does seem that there are a lot of people out there that are trying to push the U.S. into a war.
Well, I don't understand that. What kind of lessons do we draw from having been in Iraq and in Afghanistan?
And Libya, which is more to the point, which is in total chaos.
Yes, all of them. And if it's going to be an intervention, it has to be by the international community, not by the United States.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Raymond Zelinskis.
Pleasure, Ion. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Raymond Zielinskas, who directs the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies with the Monterey Institute for International Studies. He's a senior investigator at the Preparedness and Emergency Response Research Center component at the Center for Nonproliferation Studies, which is working in partnership with the Center for Infectious Diseases and the Emergency Readiness at the School of Public Health, University of California, Berkeley. He's a former United Nations Special Commission Chemical and Biological Weapons Inspector in Iraq and is the author of Biological Warfare, Modern Offense and Defense. And his new book, co-written with Milton Leichenberg, is The Soviet Biological Weapons Program, A History. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a senior official who served at the highest levels in George W. Bush's White House, and we'll talk about Bush's legacy.